Welcome, folks, to episode 3503 of the Survival Podcast. Our special guest had a little bit of trouble getting on to StreamYard, but we got that worked out, and I will have Josh Jorick with us in just a bit. We're going to be talking about building your own house today, how to get a loan. Specifically, I believe his house that they built is a timber frame house, so we'll probably talk about that. Some ways to get by while the house is being built, and a bunch of other stuff, and I think this is a hot topic right now. You know, a general rule of thumb in general contracting is about 20% markup on all services. And honestly, a lot of them charge more than that. So when you are struggling to figure out how to get yourself into a house, acting as your own general contractor and doing some of your own work as well is a great way to try to make that work in a world where it's harder to do than it was 5 years ago. I mean, I'll acknowledge it. So we will have the Josh and his wife on, Lydia, in just a minute. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Above Phone, where you can take back your tech and stop having like your app provider spy on you, your cell phone carrier spy on you, and your phone manufacturer spy on you. Like, you really can do that. And I know what you're thinking, like, this is really complicated. It's not. It's a phone. If you can use a phone, you can use an Above Phone. It really isn't any harder. And they will give you a free hour of consulting to help you transition over to your Above Phone. And if what you want to do is like use your Above Phone on your network, more like an iPad for a while till you get used to it, and then transition over, you can do that too. It's no problem at all. That's what I did. So check it out today at AbovePhone.com. Next up today, who's rapidly becoming my favorite sponsor? Anton's Land of Biltong, man. Every other Wednesday, I get an auto shipment of Biltong and Duars dry sausages sent to me. I just got my notice from UPS. It's out for delivery. I'm going to talk to Anton, man, and maybe change the day of the week that my stuff comes. Like, I should be here showing you this when I'm talking about it, but I get it on a Wednesday. Then Thursday is expert counsel show where you can't see me because it's not on video. And by the time we get back to the video live feeds, it's usually all gone. That's because it's so dadgone good. Check out Anton's Land of Biltong. And I'm also going to reach out to Anton this week and ask him about coming to the fall workshop and bringing some of his wares for sampling. We'll see if we can make that happen. But check it out today. Again, great company. Discount for MSB members as well. And just a bunch of great options. But try the Duars because, you know, you can make Biltong if you really want to. But if you want to make those doers, it takes a little bit of extra effort. With that, let's bring our special guest on with us, Josh and Lydia. And last name, I already screwed it up, so it is Jorick?
Yeah.
Perfect. Jorick. Okay, I got it. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to be on.
So let's start out with, before we like kind of plow into the topic of building your own home, What is y'all's background, and what made you decide you kind of wanted to step out and do something a little bit different?
Lydia and I were both actually homeschooled growing up, which I thought was kind of a cool topic with your podcast. So we grew up, graduated, got diplomas from that. We lived in a small town outside of a big city, you know, suburbs, and we were there for 5 years. Had some kids while we were there. Decided it was time to upgrade and started looking around for what we wanted. You know, we wanted some property, and everybody wants, you know, the nicest house they can afford, as you've talked about, but nothing was in our price range that we really liked. And even things that were in our price range that were fixer-uppers, because I had done construction since high school, they just weren't what we were looking for. So we decided the only way that we were going to get what we wanted and be able to afford it was to build it ourselves. So, and even with that in mind, we knew we wouldn't be able to afford to have it built. So we were going to have to do it all ourselves if we wanted to get our dream.
So let's talk about that. Cause like one of the things that I think people struggle with is, well, how am I going to get financing on this? Because if you're buying a house, that's a conventional house, and if you make enough money, qualify for the loan, it's pretty straightforward process. There's even like the FHA loans and stuff like that. What's the process like when you're like, I'm going to build this house and it's not there yet, and you're going to the bank and asking for money to build something versus just buy something?
Right. So we found that corporate chain banks won't touch it. They don't even want to deal with you if you're going to build it yourself. They would work with you if you had a contractor and he had all of his, you know, insurances and everything in place. But as far as you building it yourself, that's pretty much off the table. So we fortunately have a small town bank that, you know, people's names there still, which I know is getting harder to find. But if you look around, most small rural places have that, you know, that small farm bank or that small local bank that, you know, the people there, and they'll work with you, which I was honestly surprised. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but they were very open to it. Another thing to mention is if you're buying just raw land, and that's what your loan's for, they're very leery of that too. So you need a substantial down payment. They like to see 40, 50% down for raw land because it's hard for them to sell if you are small. So if you do everything at once and you get a land and construction loan at once, they'll let you do a smaller down payment, get the land, and then take draws for the building process. So they're protected all along the way. If you were to default, they still have the ability to get their money back out if they had to resell it. And also as nice as, you know, as the consumer as well, you have a lower down payment, but you're also each stage along the way, you're drawing the money for, you know, it's in the bank. They don't give you a lump sum at the beginning. And if you're not responsible, then you end up at the end with not enough. They check up on you, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. Now, I did just have somebody ask where you guys were, and I usually ignore that till the end with questions. That's a pretty simple one. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, based on the phone number on your app, Pennsylvania, Shenandoah Valley.
You're right. We are in central Pennsylvania.
All right. So now, when you were building, from what I gather on your app, you guys lived in an RV. What are the deal with that? Like rules, like how long? Like, because Pennsylvania has a few more rules than Texas does, having myself, I know. So how'd that work out?
So it's very location dependent, we found. We're in a pretty rural location, a small county, mostly farm, no big cities. I think we now have 3 stoplights in our county, and we fought against them, but we have 3 now. So even with that being said, per township, the laws vary widely. Before we had the utilities on the land, we had to get our well, our electric, and our septic in before we could actually put the RV on our property. We had it at my brother's property. He's about 20 minutes away. His township said, yeah, move it up, move in. We don't want to know about it. Just make sure you pay your local taxes every year, and we love you.
Okay.
When we got to the point to move it to our property, a different township, they told us, as long as you are actively building a house, you're allowed to live in it. So that was very fortunate for us. But we wouldn't have the option to move it to our property and stay in it long term without showing progress on a building. So,
yeah, I would just say it's our contracting trailer or our office.
Right.
Our construction office. That's the word I was looking for, construction office.
Yes.
Right. I found a lot of times dealing with bureaucrats, the words you use
are
like rat poison for bureaucrats. When you use the right words, they go away.
Yes.
What is that? Are you living in there? Oh, no, it's our construction office. Sometimes I work really late. It's called overtime. I know you don't get any because you work for the state and all, but yeah, it sucks. And I don't get paid much, but yeah,
right.
I was here last night. You know, I mentioned the GCs generally take in the neighborhood of 20, 25 points on things like that. And it's a lot of money for you, but I mean, if you think about what they do, it's not exorbitant that they do that. If you build a $200,000 house, that's 40 grand that they make on building that house.
Right.
But how much money can you save by acting as your own GC and doing so? I guess it depends on how much you do of your own.
Yes, it really does depend. So the GC, from my understanding, they take about 25%, but then all the subs, they take their percentage too. So it adds up to quite a percentage in just, you know, labor. Plus, from a business aspect, they have to mark up all the materials. That's how business works. Totally understand it.
Yep.
And it's fair. But if you do it yourself, you can save the markup on the materials and the labor. And we were actually able to get pretty creative with building materials. So we bought some acres and decided to build a timber frame. And we have about 22 acres of timber. Mm-hmm. So we had a select cut, which gave us some cash flow to work with starting out. That went to a sawmill. You know, they paid us for it. But then there were a bunch of white pines here that they didn't want, just not very marketable for our local sawmill. And we were able to use all of our own trees to build the timber frame.
Oh, that's huge.
Yes. So just being able to use our trees, we saved $25,000 just like that right off the bat.
I mean, that's actually a lot of money, and it's more money than it was 5 years ago. Like,
exactly.
Lumber prices, people said they came down. Well, they came down from their highest. It didn't come back down to where they were.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I remember, like, for whitewood, stickwood, for indoor, studs, being like $1.80 a piece.
Right.
Not that long ago. Like, I sound like an old guy now, but I mean, this is like 2019. You know?
Right.
So that's really cool. So you had that milled. So you transported it to the mill and back, or did you have like an on-site miller come in? Or
yeah. So we a buddy of mine, Mike, he came up and helped me. We played lumberjack for a couple of months. So we cut all the trees down, topped them, drag them all out to the field. And I'm the kind of guy that I want to do everything myself. I want to have my fingerprints on it all. I can do it. You know, I know how it's done. But my wife here is the voice of reason, and she says, we need to have somebody else build the actual frame. Just for time's sake, they know what they're doing. They designed the actual frame, so it's structural and up to code. So yeah. I was a little dragging my feet on that part, but now looking back, I am so glad I listened to her.
Thank you.
Yeah. I always say, like, my decision on whether I'm going to do it or pay somebody to do it, is it aesthetic and I'm going to have to look at it for the rest of my life and I'm not that good at it? Or is it really important and it's going to come down on top of my head and I'm not really that good at it? In both of those cases, let the pros in at it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how long did this take? Like, from the time you actually like started building till you were done and y'all were living in this RV, like how
right.
was that process time-wise?
So living in the RV ended up being 9 years. Now it wasn't a 9 year build.
Not 9 years of build, no.
But we sold our house in Camp Hill, lived in the RV, and it was a 2 year plan. And it sounds good, right?
Yeah.
2 years.
2 years.
But we took actually a couple of years to find the right piece of property, because we intend to be here forever. We wanted to make sure it was
okay.
The right one. After that, I wanted water on the property. I grew up with a pond, like a farm pond.
Yes.
We fished all the time, and I had to have water. So we found this beautiful property with a nice stream flowing through it. When we went to get our driveway permit, that turned into a big deal because the driveway crosses the stream. So extremely quick learning curve that everybody with letters after their name wants to be involved in you putting a pipe in your stream.
Sure.
So that actually took about 2 years to get the permit and cost substantial. It cost $40,000 in the end to have a piece of paper that said you can put a pipe in your creek. So that's 4 years of it right there. And then we bumped into COVID, and our local inspectors decided that nobody was allowed to work on anything because they couldn't inspect it because they weren't allowed to interact with anybody.
Even if it was just you and I.
So even though we were building it ourselves, we were still restricted by that. So all these things slowed it down along the way, plus working a full-time job. But the actual build process, from the time we started cutting the driveway in, and it's a quarter-mile driveway, utilities, till we actually got an occupancy permit and moved in was 3 years. So to give people a more realistic idea of what to expect. It's not going to take 9 years to build the house.
No.
I'd say, if you live in Pennsylvania, you might want to look for an entry to your property that doesn't go across a creek.
Yes.
That would be a big.
Oh.
Yes.
Hindsight.
As soon as you said it and I thought about where I used to live, I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. Oh. So, okay, then you have kids, right?
Yes.
And then you have dogs, and you don't have normal dogs. You have mutant ninja dogs, also known as Great Danes.
Yes.
That's a lot of people and animals living in a relatively small space for a long time. Is that difficult?
It was. So we looked at campers or RVs originally, and we thought it was a two-year plan. We looked at a small pool behind. It was probably like a 20-footer. And then we looked at a 36-foot fifth wheel, and again, my voice of reason here, Lydia, said, we really need this 36-foot fifth wheel. And I said, you know, it's so big, it's so expensive, but my goodness, am I glad that we did. So even though it was a very large fifth wheel with slide outs, and then it was 380 square feet. And we built triple bunk beds. Lydia is amazing at organization. We lived the definition of a minimalist lifestyle. If it wasn't required for your daily use, then it went in the storage unit or you got rid of it, which was really good for me. I have a lot of tools, so we were able to put those into a trailer, an enclosed trailer. But it really made me find what was really important to me as far as necessities, what I use, what sat in the storage unit for ended up being 9 years. And in the end, we're like, wow, we didn't need half of that stuff.
A lot of it we got rid of.
Right.
Because we're like, we don't need it.
And fortunately, we're a very outdoorsy family. We love being outside, hunting and fishing, walking the dogs. So the RV was pretty much, you know, to sleep in, to cook in. The winter was a little more difficult, but but the summer, you know, spring through fall was actually pretty enjoyable. We were outside most of the time.
Okay. Now, when you start running into things like you did, like all that money to get a pipe, and that wasn't even the pipe. That was for the paper that says the pipe's allowed to exist. You probably got pretty creative with saving money on other things. So what are maybe some unique ways you found to save unique amounts on your home besides just the labor component?
Yeah, so I mentioned the timber already.
Yeah, it's huge.
In addition to the actual timber frame itself, we were able to use our wood because when they cut the beams, they ended up with thousands of board foot of one-bys. So all the trim in our house, the doors, interior doors, windowsills, those were all our lumber as well. So that was thousands. And we did have some, since we select cut it, there was still some substantial hardwoods. So we were able to cut up a bunch of those to make all the flooring for upstairs.
Oh, wow.
Our stairway up to the second floor is all oak from one tree, actually.
If you had to buy that from Dimensional Lumber, you probably couldn't even have afforded to think about going that route with your
No.
That's crazy expensive.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, we went from, you know, it forces you to think how to save money. And in the end, we ended up with, you know, a superior product because we probably would have done laminate upstairs.
Yeah.
But now we have, you know, we'll have full 3/4-inch hardwood flooring. And the stairs ended up being, I think they're 3x12 treads, solid oak. And I priced them on the, quote, discountstairparts.com.
Yeah.
Our staircase was, I think it was $15,000 to $20,000 worth of raw material for the stairs.
Which you bought at retail.
Exactly. Yeah. At Discount Stair Parts.
Yeah, Discount Stair Parts. And I'm not putting 20 grand into a staircase. I'll totally build one worth 20 grand, but I'm not putting 20 grand into a staircase.
Okay? Exactly.
We wouldn't either.
These numbers are, like, when I look, like, I do have sympathy for younger people getting started when I hear these numbers. Because, like, my first house I ever bought was a 3-2, was about 1,600 square foot, two-story, and I paid $84,000 for it.
Right.
And it needed some TLC, but it didn't need work. It needed, like, new carpeting, countertops, like, stuff you could just do or order and get it done.
Right.
And you know, you had $20,000 in materials to build a staircase. I feel like, remember, like, Sanford and Son, I'm coming, Ethel. I mean, like, my God.
Yes.
People put in the houses now. It's crazy. I mean,
insane.
Chevy pickups are, like, $70,000. Mm-hmm. Like, you used to be able to buy a Lamborghini for the price of a pickup truck.
That's crazy. It is so out of control.
But that's why I'm glad we have you guys on, right? Because, like, you can either come at this and go, well, like, I hear so many people in, like, their 20s to mid-30s now, I'll never own a house. Well, you can choose that hard, or you can choose the heart of, how can I own a house?
And, right.
You know, it's probably hard for you to listen to somebody whine and cry like that when you guys lived in an RV for 9 years to make it. Right. Like, go away. I don't want to hear you cry anymore.
Well, that's the thing, you know.
You say you take steps backwards sometimes to go forward.
Right.
Yeah. Sacrifices.
And that's something we don't do enough anymore in this country overall. Like,
right.
Will you take a step back and go forward? Most people just won't.
Right.
Now, usually when you go through something like this, you're like, even when it all works out in the end, you're like, man, I wish I would have known. I wish I would have known not to do this. Or like, so are there some things you would do differently other than maybe try to find an alternate entrance without a creek?
That was the main
one.
The big one. We had no clue going in that that was the case. There was a deeded right of way across the stream. You know, it sounded pretty good on the, you know, during the sale. So that was definitely the big one. Some little things, we had to make some adjustments to the plans because of the cost of the driveway permit. So we had originally intended on a full walkout basement. And we nixed that and went with a slab on grade, which allowed us to do radiant floor heating, which we probably wouldn't have done, or wouldn't have done the same anyway, if we had a full basement. And kind of one of those things that's, it would have been nice, but after the fact, we're going to put up a big shop or garage eventually.
Yeah.
And that's basically what the basement would have ended up, is pretty much a catch-all and, you know, prone to leaks, typical, as well as you build them, there's always that possibility. It's not the same as above grade's place.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, the nice thing about them, though, is, like, you have that temperature-stable environment for storage and all. Like, you use it, like, as a root cellar or something.
So yes.
You might even be able to do something, not the full footprint, but some sort of small subterranean thing when you do your shop or something.
Yes. Yeah, we have plans for that because we're up on a hill, and we get some pretty good winds coming through, and we have a lot of trees still. So that would be really nice as a storage and a root cellar, but also a makeshift storm shelter.
Yeah, you got a lot of, like, what kills me is, like, where I lived in Pennsylvania, everybody had a basement.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, down here, when there's storms, they're always like, well, go to your basement. Like, nobody's got a basement here. It's black clay. It destroys foundations, or it's stone and you can't put one in. It's one or the other, you know?
Right.
But no one has one. That's one of the things I really miss about the Northeast is basements. There's a lot of things I don't miss, like $40,000 to put a pipe in. But, you know, there is, like, some climate things, and there is also, like, that almost every place having a basement is kind of really cool. Is there anything else you would do differently? Like,
we talked about some different things, small things. We have a utility room. So basically our house is a big rectangle with one jet out. That's a utility room with a closet above it. And little things like that. You think about it before and what all goes in a utility room, and seems like a good size, but then when you put everything in, you're like, man, that really could have been a little bit bigger. So, and then when we cut down all the trees for our timber frame, we pushed all the tops into a big pile. You know, I grew up pretty rural, and that's what you did with the tops. You pushed them into a pile and let them rot or burn them eventually. And I really wish I'd have chipped them all now. I see the value of chips as far as mud control and for the chicken run, for compost. And I kind of wish I had a giant pile of chips now instead of a giant pile of treetops.
Just for during construction, that can help with the mud.
Right.
Mud.
Yeah. Oh, it's so valuable for that. It's a weird thing. Like, you would think if you threw chips on top of mud, they would just kind of slide around and all. What they do is they, like, bind with it and they firm it up.
Yes.
Because, like, I guarantee you it will happen again this year. Every year, our workshop, day before it starts, it pours rain. And then everybody comes in, it just turns into a mud slop. And we just throw down, like, a quarter yard of wood chips, and it completely solidifies it. It's crazy how good they work for that.
Right. So, real quick, going back to saving money besides the labor. So, with the timber frame, I don't know if everybody knows how they are, but it's basically like a barn frame. It's got posts and beams. But you want to end up seeing all that and not enclosing any of it inside a wall. So you build a wall around it. And there's a couple of typical ways people do that with pre-made prefab panels that just screw onto the outside. But we, since we have our own labor and more time than a contractor would have and more patience, we just 2x4 framed the whole entire thing, put sheathing on it, wrapped the whole thing in ice and water guard, which is a self-adhesive, waterproof, airproof membrane. And then we stacked polyiso panels on the outside, polyiso cyanurate, and it's a commercial insulation they use on under rubber roofs. So they're very, very expensive. But we were able to find a company that sells them used. They go to jobs where they take off commercial roofs and they throw it all in a dumpster, but there's not even holes in it because they put it down, put the rubber on top, and then they use ballast, which is small rock to keep the roof down. Yeah. So when they tear it off, you know, 90% of this stuff is brand new condition and it has an extremely high R value.
Yeah, you're like commercial quality material there, right?
Yes.
You're outside the residential market at that point and you're getting it for next to nothing.
Exactly. So we found the bulk of it, this company actually does that. That's their business. And they shipped it to me on a flatbed for about a third of the cost of it new with me picking it up. So that was probably two thirds of the amount we needed. The rest of it, I was kind of scratching my head where I was going to find it. Might have to bite the bullet to buy the rest. But I drive truck now. So our warehouse where I drive out of was getting a new roof one day, I noticed. So I went and talked to their general contractor, you know, the guy in the white hard hat on the ground. and they were putting it in dumpsters. I looked at it, no holes, no water damage. And I said, would you mind if I have some of that? And he says, would you have a trailer? Yes, sir. Well, yeah, we'll load it up for you. They loaded it, strapped it down.
Oh,
they
sent
home with trailer after trailer. Every time I went in, I'd drop my trailer, bring it home every time. So I got the rest of it for free. And I ended up getting the guys a few cases of beer. And there was more than they wanted because they didn't have to pay to dispose of it. And that's in a landfill. I don't know how long it would last, but you can't burn it. I've tried burning scraps.
It does not burn.
And it doesn't burn. And there's still pieces of it in our yard floating around because it doesn't break down in the weather either.
No, this is a whole purpose for it not to do that.
Exactly, yes.
That's awesome. Like, you know, you start thinking, like, is there an opportunity in that? Like,
oh, yes.
Some other people might want some of that stuff, right? Like, that's
definitely.
And I think that, like, one of the things you said, you gave them beer for it. I have found with construction workers, everything from the tree people that you want chips from and whatever, $20, they don't care, right? $15, 12-pack of beer, it's on. Right. You know, it's like they can give money. I don't know. Like maybe they're expected to bring it home or something. But if you give them beer, they just get to drink it.
Right. Right. Yeah. The general contractor, I had texted him a few times, you know, what kind of beer do you drink? Because I really wanted to give him some. And he didn't get back to me. So like the third time I texted him, I'm like, yeah, I'd really like to show my appreciation. Like if you don't like beer, pick something else. And it turned out he was talking to all his guys who had helped him load my trailer and strap it down. Like, we're trying to decide on one. I'm like, I'll pick three.
Like, this is not a, yeah. And it's amazing what beer does in that. Like, all the trade jobs.
Right.
Like, one place we used to, well, we can't go now because the hurricane destroyed it. But the resort my wife and I went to for years on Sanibel Island, Florida. We go in, I pick up a couple 12 packs of beer. And I know we're like the all the guys that do all the grunt work, basically, where their hangout is. I just go stick in the refrigerator. And I tell them later, hey, man, there's a few 12 packs in there for you. And then, like, anything we needed.
Right, right.
Like, the power of beer barter is amazing. It really is. It's like, don't short value that little tip right there. There's so much you can get done, road crews, et cetera, with just some beer.
Yeah, and I would have been willing to buy them the best beer, but, you know, of course it turned out it was Coors and Miller.
Coors and Miller.
Fancy beer, and they're like, a case of Coors. We're like, really? So we picked that up.
Come on, it's PA. You need freaking Jenny and Yingling, right? You know? Are there some things maybe you would consider really important now that you didn't think of when you got started?
When we bought the property, I loved the woods. I grew up in the woods, and I loved the trees. But I had no idea how valuable trees were. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about trees as food products, but just the lumber value is incredible. Like, our property is still densely forested, even though we took out what we needed. And it saved us so much money. Actually, my dad retired from a steel mill, so he built a sawmill, and we ended up with that. And so I'm really looking forward to, in the future now, I can sell lumber. It's such a valuable commodity. You cut it, you know, at your leisure, stack it to dry, and then you just have stacks of money sitting there, and people lining up to get it because it's so much less expensive than the stuff from the box store.
And generally better quality.
Right, exactly.
I get a lot of stuff delivered when I'm doing projects. I don't really get dimensional lumber delivered anymore because I don't know what tree they get it from, but it must be like a spiral spruce or something.
Right.
It's really bad sometimes.
It is, yes. Yes. And you have so much opportunity to do custom stuff. My neighbor actually is a farmer, and he's rebuilding a hay wagon with oak. And he can't even find the size oak he needs at any box store. You have to custom order it from a sawmill. And the big sawmill up here doesn't want to bother with custom cuts. So that's just one example of, you know, the market that we could potentially have is he needs a 2.5 by 3.5 piece. No problem. I can cut that. That's easy. So,
I guess you can make it anything you want.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So trees, looking through my notes. I made notes because I've never done this before. So
that's all right. You're doing just fine.
Something that I would really consider important. I've always valued family so highly. That's why we did this whole thing. But including the kids in the process all along the way was phenomenal. And that was as valuable, just the experience with them, as the end product. We have 3 kids. Our daughter's 19, and our boys are going to be 14 and 15 here this month. So they started at, 12 and 13 or 11 and 12.
I'm not mathing anymore. Yes, I'm like,
but having the opportunity to have, your own property. So, a really good friend of mine brought his backhoe up and left it here for the whole duration. It's actually still here. But they were able to learn how to use that at that age. Mm-hmm. And that's such a rare opportunity these days that kids are allowed to do stuff like that. And I found not only do they enjoy it and they get an education, but they're actually really good at it. they're very coordinated and pick it up so fast because it's all brand new. They don't have any preconceived ideas of how things work. They figure it out and they're very good at it.
I also think there's just something valuable with kids about giving them like an ownership stake in things.
Yes.
Like they have a lot more enthusiasm when they feel like they were part of anything, right? Like even get them to eat vegetables. You want to get your kid to eat vegetables, get them to plant one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, then they want to try it because they planted it.
Right. That's exactly right.
So you guys mentioned you were both homeschooled. Are you homeschooling your kids?
We are. So we're actually cyber schooling. So you do that with your grandkids, I believe.
Yep.
So it's same environment at home, but they have their individual teachers in different classes, which is pretty cool. I think Lydia and I both did traditional homeschooling where, our parents actually taught us and worked really well for us. I think it's pretty neat to have, teachers that specialize in different subjects to really fine tune some of the stuff. And I think they have a lot of neat opportunities with that.
It was a huge asset while we were building because we could be working on the house and know that they were in good hands if like one of our kids were struggling with a subject. They'd be like, well, I chatted with the teacher, and so it worked out.
Yeah, I think there's just options available today that just weren't when we were kids, right? I use Excellus, which is similar to what you're talking about, where they don't really have, live teachers all the time. They have pre-recorded lessons. They work through at their own pace.
Okay.
And the school can give them some help, but, we just have gotten to the point, if it's something we're not really good at ourselves, like some weird math thing or something, because they keep changing how they teach math, we use OutSchool, and we'll just, if Braylon's struggling, we'll just say, okay, this one thing that you're slow on, we'll get him a tutor for, a one-hour session and get him through that, and then he goes right back to self-directed, program that's all run by the school, and it works phenomenally. And they had a little bit of issue with that until we, sat him down and said, listen, a lot of this stuff we can help you work through. The math, you need to know it because if you start falling behind in math, it cascades.
Right.
Right. Because you're expected to know this, and now you're here, and you don't know where the 5 came from.
Right.
What do you think? Take the 5. Well, because I remember being that in school, what 5? Where the hell did the 5?
Right.
So I make sure that's not happened to them, and then we push them a little extra because Celis, honestly, I feel like come to their writing standards are a little bit lower than where I want them, so we kind of push them above that. But otherwise, it is so nice to have kind of a pre-designed curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of, you can, you know, and we're working with the granddaughter to get her to the point where, like, she can be like her big brother, where 90% of it's all on them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Anyway, right, guys? I mean, you can't. Yeah. You didn't expect that, like, you're going to go to work for somebody like me and I'm going to be over your shoulder telling you how to do your job.
Right.
That happened once. The second time over the shoulders to show you the door.
Right.
You know? So I think it's really cool that you guys are able to do that with them. Is it like an organized program or something you guys put together? Or
it is organized. So Pennsylvania actually has a cyber school called the
Commonwealth Charter Academy.
Okay.
So it's technically still a public school.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're very, how do I put it? They're very open-minded, though. Their teachers aren't teaching the public curriculum that, you know.
It's written by the teachers of that school.
Right.
The curriculum
has far less of an agenda as a traditional government school.
One of my nieces did that. We have something very similar here in Texas. It's probably not the same, but it's the same but different, man.
Right.
We went through that, and then the younger niece ended up using Acellus. So I think lots of options.
Yeah, the teachers are really cool, though, because some of the subjects, you know, everybody has their own beliefs and opinions, but a lot of the subjects, science, you know, beginning of the world kind of stuff, they teach it as a theory and not as this is exactly what happened in this order.
Yes.
This could have happened, but it's not the only theory is how they teach it. And I really think that's really neat that they're open-minded like that.
Yeah, I went to high school in Pennsylvania, and that's how it was taught in regular school back then. This is a theory.
Yes.
They kind of acknowledged the theory of creation, like acknowledged that it existed. They didn't teach it.
Right.
I even remember like my 10th grade science teacher asking us, like, well, what do you think?
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And I just blew her brain and I'm like, yeah, okay, I just believe in existence. Like, what? I'm like, I believe there was always something. It just changes form.
Right.
Okay, Tammy, what do you think? Like, I'm not gonna go there. So, after all this, would you do it again? What I mean when I say that is not, are you going to build another one? Like,
right.
If you went back to where you were when this all started, would you take this path again?
Yeah. So, this was a deep question. And I talked to Lydia quite a bit before I wrote down my notes on this one. And
I didn't even see what you wrote.
I thought it was kind of funny, but the short answer is it depends. I thought you would think that was funny. That's his answer.
I think it's accurate.
That's an accurate answer. It depends.
Because our initial thing, I asked Lydia, like, would you do this again? And her initial thing was like, no, that was too much work. And I said, well, put it this way. If we were right now sitting in an RV, you know, on our property and there was no other structure, would you do it again, knowing everything you know now? Oh, yeah. Well, if we were sitting in an RV again, yes, we would definitely do it again.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to at this point because we're enjoying it so much.
if they were like, hey, sell it, and would you do it again to make a profit? And I'd be like, yeah, no.
Right.
No.
I mean, I would enjoy helping other people. I think that would be fun. Yes. That would be very exciting. Our one son has talked about building potentially on the 22 acres, and if he wants to, that's great. If not, but I would love to be part of that.
Yeah.
But to redo it for ourselves again, just to do it, no.
Right.
But I'm glad we did it, and I have no regrets.
We want to encourage people that it's possible, it's doable, and you know, I have a construction background, but even if you don't, there is so much online now. Like, honestly, you know, talking about YouTube University, there was things that I didn't even know how to do. We put in radiant floor heating, and I did construction since high school, but I've never been into HVAC. But, you know, a couple hours on YouTube, and I knew how the systems worked, how to lay them out. The company we bought it from, Radiant Tech in Vermont, we sent them a floor plan, and they designed the system for us, sent plans how to put it together. It's very doable. And even if you wanted to do parts of it, like we did pretty much everything but the frame, but you could pick and choose if you know, you don't want to touch the electrical or the plumbing. That's definitely understandable. You can hire somebody to do that. But the big bulk stuff, you know, find a buddy that knows concrete, you know, and get enough.
Yeah.
You just need labor to place concrete and one or two guys that know what they're doing.
Yeah, and like the electrical work and all, if you're not really sure what you're doing, put in the wall box illuminators or whatever, run all your wiring, and if you really don't feel comfortable even like putting on outlets instead of having an electrician put it down to the main power. Run everything, Mm-hmm. And then let somebody come in and terminate, because that'll mm-hmm. save you a ton of money too, because they're paying, you know, some helper that in the union market's probably making $25, $35 an hour to basically pull wire into a wall.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is, that is not hard. I mean, I used to be in structured cabling, and we taught, you know, people that were barely functional how to do that in a week.
Right.
And I mean, when I say barely functional, I mean, you almost said like, so I'm glad you made it to work eventually today, and I'll tie your shoes for you. Right? You know, like did she lay out your clothes, and is that why they match? Because I can't really see you making your socks the same by yourself because they could do this. So I think, you know, we can all do some of the work ourselves.
Absolutely.
Right.
Even just cleanup. Like my brother, they had a house done. They were having it built, but he was able to shave tens of thousands of dollars off just clearing his own land.
Yeah.
And doing his own driveway and doing the yard work, like being the cleanup crew. His family and the kids and stuff would go behind and do all the cleanup that shaved money off of that. There's always ways to save.
Right. I've seen people, you know, go out and buy like a used Bobcat or something to do work like that. And by the time they do, the numbers are like, so basically I got the Bobcat. I got paid to get the Bobcat.
Yes.
When I figure out what it would have cost for somebody to do this for me, and now I'm done and I have the Bobcat.
Yes.
Right.
Or a little excavator or something like that.
Yeah.
I would say buying something like that versus renting it would be a huge savings, and then turn around and resell it if you need to.
Yeah, it depends on your
need. Do work with it. Like, there's always call for people that can come out and do a few hours worth of work with a Bobcat or some other piece of equipment, depending on you know, what situation you're in.
Yeah, so.
But even renting it to do the work, like if it's something you can knock out in a day or two, renting it versus paying somebody?
Exactly. We, my friend who brought the backhoe up, and he has a good friend who's an excavator for a living. So we put our quarter mile driveway in, which included cutting all the topsoil out, putting shale in, topping it with stone. We excavated the site for the house and dug the footers. We installed the septic system, which is a sand mound, and dug the holes for the tanks. And we trenched for the electric line. And his buddy did a breakdown, what he would have charged to do the same thing, because he's a friend and he had time. Yeah. But we saved about $130,000 overall for that portion, just the excavation portion, which blew my mind. This wouldn't have been optional at all if we had to pay somebody to do it.
Yeah.
But knowing the number it's just phenomenal, like what you can do. And I love running equipment, so it was really fun for me. Maybe not everybody's the same, but I don't know how you can be on a big piece of equipment moving dirt and trees and not smiling.
No, it's fun. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are afraid, like, it's not that hard to learn how to use. Go somewhere where you can jack shit up.
Right.
It'll be a big deal, and play with it a little bit and get a feel for it, especially like excavators, getting to where you can move that boom with keeping that level.
I even learned how to.
But it doesn't take long.
Yes, exactly.
If I can, anybody can.
Yeah, Lydia, the boys, they all can run equipment now.
It was fun. I was like, oh, this is why you guys like to play in the dirt.
When we needed to get some work done here, my best friend, his son, wanted to learn how to use a Bobcat and excavator. So he paid the rental fee two different times for one of each, and then brought his son out here, did all the work for me. Just so he could give his son the experience, because like where he lives, like everybody's like, you can't do that, right? Like, so I needed the work, and his kid got because he's getting to the point now he's trying to give his kid experiences instead of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
experiences last, right? You know,
right? Exactly.
That's awesome.
What are you working on now? You've got your home. I can see part of it behind you there on the screen. Very nice looking, and you're settled in and. You don't have to do it again, thankfully, but what's up next? Like, what's your next projects and all?
Garage.
Yeah, so we want to build a shop next, the garage. I grew up, I had a lot of experience doing mechanical stuff, rebuilding motors. Had a neighbor way up in the woods, and I was the pesky young kid, 16, 17, showing up at his house in the morning because I knew he'd be working on the vehicle, and I was just so interested in anything with tires and an engine. So I would bang on his door. Looking back now, I know I woke him up, but he was so patient and would teach me how to change brakes, how to rebuild engines, and I really want to get the shop built so that my boys can get that experience too. We've saved, just from what he's taught me and, you know, learning along the way, I can't even calculate tens of thousands of dollars in savings working on our own vehicles. Mm-hmm. And Lydia actually mentioned it first, and I'm all for it, is we need a lift in the shop so that we can really show these boys, you know, how to do stuff, make some money, flip some things if they want to do that, whatever their interests are, but get the basics down at least.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think everybody should learn the basics of how to work on vehicles. Like,
yeah.
Even if you're not going to, the fact that I was a mechanic has saved me so much money over the years when somebody in a shop told me something and I went, yeah, no,
right.
I don't have to do that.
Exactly.
You know,
power.
It is. Yeah. And we're slowly setting up our little homestead here. So we have chickens and quails and rabbits so far. We're expanding the chicken coop to make it into a little mini barn and hopefully get goats next spring. Mm-hmm. I know your thoughts on goats. And how
I'm fine with goats as long as I don't have them.
Right, right.
They make delicious tacos. I mean, they really do. They're fantastic.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that. Our neighbors have, they actually have a business breeding and selling them, but they told us that they're not as bad as you think escape artists as long as they are terrified of the wire.
And yeah.
So
Ferguson's approach. He calls it goat terrorism. They cut that wire one time, they should be like, I don't ever want to do that again.
Right. And we have the sawmill now that my dad built. It's a small band sawmill. So I've been playing around with that, cutting some stuff for the chicken coop expansion and other little projects, and looking forward to doing that as kind of a side hustle, stacking some lumber and drying it and moving that as long too. I really enjoy that, and maybe upgrading the mill a little bit, automating it. It's pretty manual right now. It has power up and down, but you push it through the logs. So I think a little automation or that would be in order and very fun. The boys can learn alongside me. That'll be a learning experience for me too.
How much land do you guys have? I don't know if you said it and I missed it.
Yeah, we have 22 acres.
Okay, cool.
So, and another opportunity with the sawmill is there are probably three or four tree companies in our immediate area, you know. So I've talked to them, and they cut everything for firewood and chip the tops. Mm. And I recently talked to one. I'm like, well, if you run out of room for the chips, I can take tractor trailer loads, all you want to get rid of, which they were excited about. Huh. And all their tree bottoms that they cut into firewood, I said, you know, if you have anything that's worth anything as far as lumber, you know, we could work out a deal. I'll give you firewood prices for logs you don't even have to touch. And they thought they liked that idea too. They don't have to cut it and split it and stack it and then try to resell it. They get firewood prices for it, and I'll bring the logs home. They don't have to do anything with them. So
cool, man. Other than stuff like that, you got any side hustles going on?
So while we were in our camper, of all places, Lydia decided, she's always loved Great Danes. I had a Great Dane when I was a very small kid. So we've got one, fell in love with them. And Lydia actually has a certificate in veterinarian assistance. So she's pretty switched on with animals, loves animals. But she decided that she'd like to breed Great Danes. So we started acquiring some breeding animals in our RV, which they're pets for us.
They're family.
Family. They're not just breeding stock. But we've acquired, now we'll have soon to be 8 Danes.
Soon to be 8, yeah.
So 2 males and the rest are females. And they actually, I don't know if you can see behind me, their kennels are actually in the house.
Okay.
It's back there. And so she's made quite a business out of that. It's funny because I listen to your podcast and she comes up with all these ideas, and basically I just confirm, oh yeah, that's a good idea. I heard that on the podcast. As far as her marketing, she has a really nice website that she put together, her customer interaction, and she does a lot of videos on TikTok and stuff to really engage people, and I'm really proud of her. It's really taken off. So it's actually probably to the point where it's more of a side hustle now. It started off as a side hustle, but it's a full-time job for you now.
It's a full-time. It's full-time.
Cool.
God bless him. He'll be like trying to talk to me, and I'm like, sorry, I'm talking to somebody. I'll be with you in a minute.
All right, let's take a few questions for people before we wrap up here then. That one looks like it's for me. I'll go ahead and answer it anyway real quick. After Dorothy says for the third or fourth time you should move out in the woods and build Jagistan and keep bad people out, Is this the future? How do you plan for this? I think they meant is us building our own house. Probably not. I don't know if I have. I'm in my 50s. I don't know if I have 9 years to sit in an RV while I build a house. I would be up for some level of remodel work and something like that. But if I do it at this point in my life, I'm going to want to find a place and anything that it really needs to have done that can get done before I put one thing inside it.
Right.
I actually made a joke, and I'm like half serious with it. When I moved here from Arkansas, that as a prepper, having moved once, if I ever move again, if I can't sell it, I'm going to burn it. Like, this new shit in the house, and I'll move it. We did have Kayvon guests who did the timber framing. Did you get the Amish people to do it for you there in Central PA?
We certainly did. Yes.
Did you get the Amish to do it?
Yes. We actually contacted a few different companies. New England's kind of, I don't know, in my opinion, they're known for their timber frame. So yeah. We talked to a couple companies up there, obviously top quality work. And we were at a small festival in our county they have every year. And there was an Amish crew. They had a pergola set up they built, and it was timber framed.
It's called Crickside Barns.
Yeah, Crickside Barns. And so I asked, it's called Crickside Barns. So I asked the guys, like, do you guys ever build houses? Oh, all the time. I was like, your name's a little deceptive. So we got them to give us a quote. We had the floor plan, but they designed the frame. And when they gave us the quote, I was blown away. It was, I think it was about a third of the price of any of the New England or North Carolina companies that we had contacted. And they were local, so that was pretty neat.
Very, very cool. The Amish don't seem to like technology, but they like money.
They do.
Easy to hire them to do stuff, and I'll have to do some Pennsylvania translation here. So he said Crickside. A crick in Pennsylvania is a creek. But a creek is a creek that's not quite as big as the one that you call a creek. It's
right.
A little bit smaller. The exact point at which the creek becomes a creek, that's subject to interpretation by the individual.
You can decide the which it is over a shoe fly pie.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right. It's a dark colony, right? Are there any pictures or videos of your property or house that people could take a look at?
There certainly is. So I'm still on Facebook, and I'm setting up, it's called White Pines Estate, to put all of our pictures on from the whole building process from beginning to end.
Okay.
It's public, but not all the pictures are on there yet. I should have those uploaded, the rest of them.
The only link I have for you is the Great Dane site. If you could pop me an email when we're done, I'll add it to the show notes where people can check you guys out.
Sure. Sure.
Ryan.
Perk by V, I guess, or 5, said, what was the name of the roof material again? Sounds incredibly handy.
So the insulation we used was polyiso-cyanurate, and they typically just call it polyiso. Now, that's the insulation. So we did a metal roof and metal siding, but underneath the polyiso is the actual insulation material.
Okay. All right. Okay. So then the last one was from Hugs. Did they come across any issues getting signed off? And we'll say other than the culvert issue with
Right. So as any, like any typical build, you still have inspections along the way, which as much as I hate any kind of government oversight, I do see why they do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we were to sell this or you were to buy a house, you know, it's got some basic quality standards. Mm-hmm. It's not going to fall on you. So throughout the process, as the inspector came by, we had fortunately the same inspector for the whole process. And he was super nice to work with. I would say from experience doing construction and this project is be humble with your inspector and don't act like you know everything because they will point out the first time they come out a few things wrong. And if you take it well and you fix it, then they're real easy to work with. But if you push back and say, no, that's not how it is, it gets bad real quick and they can make your life miserable.
You're at their mercy.
You know, and I'll put out another kind of value in what they do. I am not worried that I'm going to build a house that's going to fall on my head. If I was building a house right now, though, I would want to know anything that if I go to sell that house, when a certified home inspector walks in, that he's going to put on his report. Because that's where, like, even though it will never be a problem, that's where it will become a problem.
Right.
And I've been a dick sometimes as a buyer with stuff like that that's popped up. And it's like, but it would be fine. I know it would be fine. But one day I might have to sell this house too.
Right.
So, like, you want to know that, and that is the one thing I will say that they may really save you some grief with.
Mm-hmm. Was he great to work with? But once we got to know him over the course of the project, he pointed out things that our international residential code, they need to be done. But he would tell us, that's ridiculous. I don't agree with that or enforce that. So get an inspector that you're on good terms with that is realistic. There's some codes now that to some guy sitting at a desk somewhere, it makes sense in his head, but on the ground in real life, everyday living, it doesn't work.
It doesn't make sense.
To get the go-ahead to not do those things or to do things slightly different to make them not only less expensive, but also day-to-day just so much more livable was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and before I let you guys go, I don't know if you saw it earlier when I put it up there, but it seems like your niece is checking things out here.
My sister-in-law. Oh, yeah, with her kids probably.
Yeah. It says, hey, Uncle Josh. So Hannah's saying hi. Guys, this has been a great interview. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Again, if you can, if you get me any other links besides the Great Dane site, I'll add those to the show notes, which will be live, folks, in about 30 to 45 minutes from right now. If you're watching this live, if you click the link down there right now, it won't go anywhere because we're not done yet. But Josh, Lydia, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, real quick, I want to wrap up. Want to let you guys know one of the ways you can support this show, obviously, is to become a member of the Member Support Brigade. And if you do that, you'll help us out and you'll get discounts that'll more than pay for your membership. And right now, that is more the case than normal because we do have a sale going on for the next week and a half because it'll run until next Monday. And that's $35 a year for MSB discount code TSPC. Also, there is a better deal for some of y'all that are members who have expired. And I sent you an email and I want to say something today. The email tells you how to join and get your discounted rate, which is even better. But I'm getting tons of emails from people saying, I logged in and it says I'm locked out. That's because your account expired. And it says right on there, to add a subscription, go to the orders page. And there's a blue words that says orders page. That's a link. You click it and then you can sign up. And yes, it will say $50 a year. And until you put the discount code in, that's also in the email you got, it'll keep saying that. So anyway, just let you guys know, I'm not picking on anybody. Anybody wants to be a customer, I want to help. But I've answered that email probably 18 times in the last, 4 hours. So anyway, and if you are going to sign up as a new member and get the discount that TSPC gives you, you won't see the discounted price until you put in the discount code. That's how that works. So just good to know there. Anyway, the other thing I want to let you guys know is you can always support us by doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z. tspaz.com. I got a new item today for you. This one's not from Amazon. It's from Vavor, and it is a telescopic ladder. Guys, I love this thing. This thing is awesome. I even did a video for you guys that you can check out in the write-up, but this ladder, it folds down to, it's a little less than 3 foot on the long dimension, so you can throw it in the back of a compact car's trunk, but it extends to 12 and a half feet. It's very stable, very steady, really easy to set up, really easy to put away. And it has a bushing on both sides of it that does something that most ladders like this don't do well. And that is if you're going up a tree to take some limbs off or a pole, and I would advise that you have somebody stabilize a ladder for you using it in that kind of situation. But most ladders, you have that, you have that top rung and it's flat metal and you're going against something round and you have a lot of potential kind of to roll around. Where this has kind of a concave bushing on both sides to do that with. Anyway, if you check this thing out, you're going to love it. Really, really happy to be working with Vavor. They've done a lot in working with me to help get sample product to me so I can actually give, full-on reviews for you guys. And with what happened with being on the road, getting sick, and losing my dog, Charlie, I'm way behind. I got like 3 more products sitting out there to get reviews up for you in the next few days, and I'll try to do that. Anyway, guys, thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. And then on Friday, we'll have a Friday flashback, and we are back to regularly scheduled programming. Finally, thanks for bearing with me through some life events. Take care, guys, and I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode. Just run you round.
said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.